Third hour DDC here on this gorgeous Wednesday afternoon here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. Let's say hello and good afternoon to David Ubben from The Athletic. He now joins us, and he was a part of this article along with, he assisted Stuart Mandel on The Athletic about NIL, certainly a hot topic in the world of recruiting and college athletics when it comes, especially in this particular topic, football. And he now joins us. David, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks for doing this. And this topic is maybe what had Jimbo Fisher losing his mind a little bit earlier, right? I know sliced bread didn't help and Bro Bible, but you know, a lot of people were talking about maybe the money that might be getting exchanged. And he's saying, hey, it's all there for you to see. But this is pretty interesting watching how these coaches react to this, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably took exception to the $30 million mark, which is not really reality. But I agree with you in that I don't think, you know, I think people still want to believe in the idea that, well, you know, players only go to places because of the tradition or because they love the logo or the coach is such a dynamic recruiter. And, like, it's fine to make choices on money. You guys work at this radio station you do because they made you a good offer. And the people listening, you work the job you do because they made you the best offer you could get. People make decisions based on money all the time. But I feel like people want to romanticize recruiting because that's the way it's kind of always been in theory, you know, bagmen aside. But that's just, you know, this is capitalism taking place.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And we've talked about this a number of times on the show. And that's kind of my school of thought as well, is, well, this is just basically, you know, it's kind of like gambling in this country, right? Like, we seem to be going into this now, you know, it's legal here in the state of Tennessee, sports gambling, and, you know, forever it was taboo, like, you know, oh, leagues were like, we would never have a team in Vegas, and you can't talk about gambling, like, oh, that's bad, that's so bad. Well, did you think that stopped gambling in this country? Like, we know that's not the case, and we know Vegas, look how that city was built. It's just now it's out there for everybody to see, right? Now you're making money off the gambling. Now everybody's embracing it. Well, this is the way I view NIL, yeah. Right? Like, this stuff, you just brought up the bag man. They made movies, Hoosiers. We'll watch Hoosiers. I mean, not Hoosiers, Blue Chips. You know, look, they're basically poking fun, giving a tractor and stuff that went on. Now it's just out there more in the open for people to see.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. I think, you know, it is what it is. Not everybody is aggressively recruiting with money right now, but a lot of places are. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, right now there's sort of two schools of thought among collectives. You know, there's a group that is recruiting pretty heavily and saying, hey, if you come here, your market value is X and paying that. And then there's a group that says, we're not going to be part of recruiting. We're not going to be involved in that. And, you know, that's fine. That's their choice, I guess. But I wonder, you know, if that proves to not be fruitful, if those people sort of change their tune over time. I suspect that may be the case.
How do you think Josh Heupel and his staff have used this to benefit Tennessee in their recruiting practices?
Well, I mean, I suppose it's not them, right? But it is certainly something that they can utilize, and we've seen it pay off, you know, for them, obviously. You know, Spire Sports has had deals with guys and helped them close the 2022 class in a really strong way. You know, I think when I wrote about them last month, or what, I guess February, it feels like last month, but February, you know, I think they had deals with seven guys, you know, in the 2022 class, and that number is only going to grow in 2023. So, you know, it's been a big part of what they've been able to do in sort of attracting people to Tennessee. And I think ultimately the fans don't really care. You know, the coach might take, like we saw with Jimbo, you know, might take offense to, well, you know, that's not why they came here, so-and-so. You can't really prove why someone comes or does anything necessarily. But ultimately, you know, if they're wearing the jersey and on the field and producing, then, you know, who cares why they're there or whatever. Fans won't care. They just want to win.
It's a fascinating subject. We could probably do a week's worth of shows on this from all angles. But, David, if you can, we're talking to David Ubben from The Athletic. Can you simplify it for maybe the casual listener on how an NIL collective works? And let's just use the example that you wrote about here recently about what's happening over in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty simple. You know, a group of people, usually for profit. Some of these are charities, but that gets a little bit more complicated in what you can do with players. So I won't go down that rabbit hole. But basically, you have people who say, okay, I'm going to start a collective. Now I need to collect money. That can be from big-time donors. That can be from Joe Everyfan, who's giving $20 a month or whatever you want to give. You know, in Tennessee's example, they do both. And then they go and talk to players and say, we have this much amount of money. You know, Tennessee's a great place. I bet if you come to Tennessee, you know, you can make this amount of money. And guys can make that amount of money. And that's basically how it works. And, you know,
and this is an organization that's separate, right? They're not working for the university per se, right? They're working alongside.
The university can't be involved in that. The university can't be directing that. But certainly they are not shy about, hey, we represent, I say represent, they operate on behalf of Tennessee. They want to see Tennessee succeed. They're not,
right,
you know, hoping that guys go to Florida. They're not hoping that guys go to Kentucky. They want guys to go to Tennessee, and that's pretty clear. So that's, in short, what a collective does right now, and they're sprouting up all over the place. I think Alabama launched theirs like a week ago. Notre Dame launched one this week. You know, right now, you know, as we wrote earlier this week, the people that are out in front are, you know, Tennessee is one of those. Nebraska, Oregon, Texas, Texas A&M, those are sort of the quintet of teams that are pretty far out in front right now in terms of organization and funding. And can they maintain that lead and turn it into recruiting and turn it into wins? Time will tell.
So basically, am I wrong in saying that it's just the old school boosters now have been legalized, and this is an upfront way to do it, and now you don't have to be secretive about it?
In theory, I mean, I think that the critics of this practice would say that it's not NIL, that it's pay for play. If you wanted to say that, I guess, you know, I probably wouldn't disagree with you in terms of the, you know, what we're really talking about here. But ultimately, the way that the NIL rules are written by the NCAA, if you have quid pro quo, and in all of these contracts, there's explicit language that says this was not a recruiting inducement. You know, the collectives that are aggressively recruiting basically believe the NCAA is not going to do anything, and that they have a level of detachment from saying, hey, this is not a recruiting inducement, and you can't really prove that. And, you know, all you have to do is, if a player gets money, he has to provide a deliverable, and in a lot of cases, that's appearances at fundraising events for these collectives, or social media posts or various other events that they'll do, and that's your deliverable. And if you have that quid pro quo, you know, everything else is sort of, you know, its own thing and hard to prove anything else.
So who checks on the quid pro quo, or if you have a, like you said, deliverable? I can remember a movie when I was a kid in the early 80s. It was called One on One, where a guy, the actor's name was Robbie Benson. I'm going to age myself. Darren might remember this movie, but he gets a big-time scholarship to a college basketball program, and they give him the, quote, job, and it's to water the field in the morning. And the first day he shows up to do the job, he realizes that the field he's supposed to water has an automatic sprinkler system. So it's in the bag. He gets paid, but he doesn't have to do anything. So that's kind of, I mean, you got to feel like that's going to happen here, right? In some cases.
I actually don't think so. I think it's too easy to make the money and not have to risk your eligibility. And ultimately, you know, players want to see their program succeed. Well, how do you succeed? If you're a player who's, you know, got a deal and you've agreed to come to Tennessee and you're making money, well, the group making that money is going to make money by holding events and fundraisers and those kind of things. And a lot of that is people wanting to come meet you. Well, if you no-show that, then that makes them look bad. It makes those fundraisers less of a draw. That's fewer people. That's less money to help recruit future classes So you're motivated to go out and make appearances at these events and shake hands and kiss babies and be this person that fans want you to be and all that stuff. And you have every motivation to do that. And I think, you know, if you're just no-showing all this stuff, and technically, you know, all you'd have to do is a deliverable in theory for your, you know, thing is if you just put a, you know, a social media post and said, I love, you know, this collective name, in theory, that would be a deliverable, probably not a very effective one. But there's a lot of motivation for guys to do that deliverable because those deliverables can only make it mean that you can have more talent on your team and a better chance to win. And people want to win, you know. For all the, you know, this is not what college sports are about, sort of, I don't know if I'd call it concern trolling as much as just concern over where this is going. Ultimately, it's still motivated by the same things that have always motivated college sports, and that is people want to win, and that is what this is about.
Well, we know that. Before we let you go, David, do you think
Willie, were you did you make it to three stars? Because you would have been worth $500,000 today. What was your star back then?
I'd like to think I was three stars.
Okay.
I you know,
were you a four?
Yes. No, I definitely was not four.
So you were
the
not
question
a
was three
dollars.
or 2.5 would be probably where I was on the spectrum there. But I you know, what's interesting to me is there are some people that probably want to have some sort of regulation. But, David, this is moving so fast. Do you think they'll be able to reel it in before everybody has one of these collectives?
Well, the question is, how would you do that, right? Because right now, and I've written about this last week, kind of writing about why this is pretty sustainable and why this is not going anywhere, is, you know, if you're a conference or you're certainly NCAA, if you do anything, make any move to restrict how players can be paid or restrict their movement, you're going to end up in court. You're going to be sued by someone. And there is a very strong precedent in the Alston case decided in the Supreme Court that you are going to lose, and you are going to lose handily when essentially the entire Supreme Court wrote, hey, the NCAA should not be allowed to do any of the things that they're doing. They've built this entire thing off of unpaid labor that has been illegally restricted, and people don't want to get sued. And because, for one, nobody wants to get sued ever, but when there's a precedent that's very similar and you know you're going to lose, then the NCAA and most likely the conferences are not going to do anything to restrict player compensation or to restrict player movement. So people can say, well, the NCAA has got to do something about this or change this or whatever. They're not going to do that. And the NCAA has told people, you know, when coaches have asked, administrators have asked, they're largely going to stay out of this. And so I don't think it's as much of a risk as other people do for people that are aggressively recruiting. When people say this is a recruiting inducement, maybe it's a recruiting inducement in spirit, but it's not hard to find the gigantic loopholes, and they're certainly using those right now.
David, really good stuff. Appreciate the visit. This is a fascinating topic. In fact, we'll have Candace Lee on, Vanderbilt Athletics Director, in the next hour, these third-party collectives. It's really interesting stuff. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
David Ubben from The Athletic. He assisted on this article with Stuart Mandel. Really, really good stuff. Like I said, Candace Lee coming up at 1:30 today. Deebo Samuel has asked the 49ers to trade him. We will discuss what this means for A.J. Brown and the Titans on the other side. But right now I'm going to talk to you about Cool Springs MD. You've heard me talk about them for years because I've been going there for years. They've been helping me for years become healthier and happier. And I hope you want that like I do. And I know a lot of you have because you've been going there and they have been helping you. And maybe you've tacked on some unwanted pounds and you would love to shed them, especially as the weather hopefully is here to stay with better weather. It's supposed to be in the 80s this weekend. They've got programs and products and people that can get you back on track and headed in the right direction. Rejuvenation, your appearance is important, but boy, does it get challenging as we get older. Well, they can discuss PRP, hair removal, Botox, and hormone therapy. You ever had your levels checked? Do you realize they go down as you get older? That can affect your drive. It can affect your energy. It can affect your mood. It can affect how you feel. If you feel off, well, you can look into that with them. Let them discuss BHRT, testosterone, estrogen. These are just some of the things they do under one roof there in Cool Springs at 1642 Westgate Circle. If you want to learn everything about them, just go to their website, coolspringsmd.com, or you can always pick up the phone and schedule an appointment or a consultation by dialing this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Appreciate David Uppen from The Athletic for joining us. Good stuff from him. This hour, we'll give you a chance to call in and win MLB The Show 22. You can get it now for PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo consoles at theshow.com. Rated for everyone. So keep that in mind before we get out of here. This hour, Deebo Samuel has informed the 49ers he would wish, or he would like for them to trade him. We've been talking about this group of receivers: Deebo Samuel, A.J. Brown, DK Metcalf, and Terry McLaurin. And the concern I have in this, and I kind of knew this was coming with our conversations we've had with whether it's Tim Hasselbeck or Michael Jannetty from SpotTrack and others in NFL circles. The concern I've had, Willie, is, okay, that's fine. I understand wide receivers want to get paid too. They're kind of an important piece to an offense. But here's the concern that I've got. Quarterback salaries are out of control. We know that. And I get it. It's an important position. But in football, you do need more help. Yes, the quarterback position is vitally important. But you need help. Okay, you got to have stuff elsewhere or you can't make a real run. You have to have sustained success. To have the success you're looking for, you're going to have to have good players at other positions. You got to have an offensive line that will protect your star quarterback. You got to have a target or targets to throw to, wide receivers, and a big tight end. Got to have somebody you can hand the ball off to in the backfield. There's a lot of moving parts on the offensive side of the ball, just the offensive side of the ball, to make all that work. And, oh, by the way, you better have a pretty darn good defense like the Rams had. Yes, they had Matthew Stafford and they had a good offense, but they also had a really good defense. The problem that I have is quarterback salaries have been out of control for a good while. And I know it's what we was saying. Well, it's the price of doing business. That's just what the position pays. Well, that's fine and dandy. But now you've got Ryan Tannehill counting $38 million against your cap this year. You've got Kirk Cousins counting $40 million against your cap. That's a real problem. And now these receivers are saying, fine, you want to pay the quarterback big money? That's great. Well, they need us to put up those stats. And we're pretty darn good and pretty darn important too. And I'm not saying wide receivers don't deserve to get paid. But at some point, like in any business, Willie, everybody can't get paid. Because at some point, the owner, the general manager, especially if you're in a salary cap situation, they say, hey, what do you want us to do? How are you going to pay Ryan Tannehill $38 million, A.J. Brown, let's go on the lighter side, $22 million, Derrick Henry makes $15 million. You paid Bud Dupree last offseason. And, oh, by the way, we've talked about this. Guess what's lurking? It's not this offseason, but guess what's lurking? The guy who was at the Predators game last night, Jeffrey Simmons. He's pretty good. Jeffrey Simmons is pretty good. You're going to have to pay him a whole lot of dough to keep him around. Jannetty told us yesterday, Aaron Donald's about to get paid $30 million a year. Now, he's viewed as the best in the league. But my question is, how do you make all this work? You know, to do what we do, you also need help from others. What if everybody, because what Elijah Campbell's doing, he can say, hey, you need to pay me too, just like everybody else, because I'm the one who pushes the buttons. Same thing with an engineer on site. We're going to First Horizon tomorrow. Well, Darius at Patron Platinum Club. Yeah, every job is important. You need everything. Cliff and, you know, promotions. You got to make all this to work. You're a team. We're a team at this radio station. On the football field, there's a team. But how do you pay everybody? How do you make that work? I think some teams will just be dumb about it and say, we don't care. We'll figure it out. And it'll end up biting them in the behind. But I ask you, how are you going to pay a quarterback $30 or $40 million a year and pay your top receiver $25 million a year and make everything else work?
Tough choices. You have to decide how much is a guy worth. That's what it comes down to with a salary cap. Cap is who's worth what? How much are you willing to pay? If it reaches a breaking point, you have to weigh. Do I pay more or do I make a deal and get extra draft picks? I mean, that's really the only answer that there is you have to decide what a guy is worth. If those wide receivers are really worth what they think they're worth, they'll get the money.
And do you think they are?
I think each guy is a different guy. I do think there's a point where any player, as good as they might be, would be overpaid, and it hurts the rest of your team. So I think the Deebo Samuel one is worth watching. I think what John Robinson's got to do is he's got to be creative and he's got to have good communication with A.J. Brown and his group. I think it can't be a power play because if a guy's going to hold you over a barrel like Deebo Samuel now has decided to do, like I think that the 49ers have got to be throwing their hands up and going, okay, really? You're going to go public with this? Now you put us under behind the eight ball by just saying, I want to be traded. You know, they could turn around and say, screw you.
Well, you don't.
You can sit over there.
What do you think what's going on here? A.J. Brown just scrubbed himself clean of the Titans on social media. No association whatsoever to the Titans.
Well, that's why I think that you've got to have good communication. I think you've got to make them understand that your money goes further here. All of the tools that you have. And if he's really not happy, then you have to make your decision. But I think you ask him on the front end that if you go public and you say you want to trade, that's only going to hurt you. I'm really wondering if Samuel ends up winning this battle because it's a little different for a guy in his third year as opposed to Tyreek Hill or Devontae Adams, who, you know, I think they had a little more leverage because they're further along in their career.
Well, the problem is we don't know what ultimately they want, and I guess maybe we are finding out. I mean, to me, Deebo is telling a team that just went to the conference championship game, a team that has recently been to the Super Bowl, a successful franchise, I want out. So to me, that is telling me loud and clear, I'm just here for the money. Tyreek Hill said, pay me or I want out, and he's with the Kansas City Chiefs, who's got arguably the best quarterback in the league and has been to the Super Bowl two out of the last 3 years, and last year they lost in the conference championship game. That tells me it's just about money. I've already said it. Tyreek Hill is not going to be the same. I will not draft Tyreek Hill the same in fantasy football like I have viewed him with the Kansas City Chiefs because who's kidding who? He's not on a level playing field. It's Tua versus Mahomes. It's the Dolphins versus the Chiefs. That's not even close to a level playing field, in my opinion. So his numbers are going to go down. He's not going
to
be the same player.
Well, that's what you have to do. You as a
fantasy owner. It's about the money. Deebo Samuel, now he may be looking at their quarterback situation and going, look, we may be good, but it's not because of our quarterbacks. And so maybe maybe it's not just about money. Maybe he wants to be with a better quarterback. You know, Green Bay did lose Devontae Adams, so do they go out and try to get Deebo Samuel?
Well,
I don't know.
You as a fantasy owner are not that different in terms of just, you know, in a matter of principle, you make choices for your fantasy team. John Robinson has to put the value, has to trust himself on what is the value he sees for A.J. Brown. And if it's not above the $25 million or whatever it is he's asking for, it's going to be a tough choice. That's what the 49ers are now they've clearly set Deebo Samuel's value at less than Deebo Samuel thinks it is. And they got to stick to their guns, to me anyway, because you can buckle and say, all right, look, we got to pay the fiddler here. We got to overpay, and we'll make it work. That's the other choice you have. But I think at the end of the day, that's what you have to come down to. It's tough, especially for the Titans, because they're in a unique window. A quarterback that's getting up there in age, a running back that you hope has one more year or two more years of his prime, if you're fortunate, and a roster that you've been building for about 5 years and you're looking to cash in on. That's what makes the A.J. Brown situation really interesting, because the 49ers are kind of there, but do you think they're a Super Bowl contender? They've got a question mark at quarterback.
We're going to discuss how this affects the Titans and answer that question on the other side here on the DDC, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darlington all over SportsCenter, all over ESPN today. The breaking news during our show, Deebo Samuel informing the 49ers he wants out. Trade me. So the question is, it looks like this trend of paying the receivers now makes them the second highest position, paid position in the NFL. Do you agree that they believe that they belong in the second highest paid position in the NFL? Because that's what it looks like. That's where we're, I don't know if it's we're headed, that's where we are. Because of the big deals that went down this offseason, Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, you've had these guys getting these contracts. We had on Michael Jannetty. I keep referencing it, but it was good. This is what these guys do. They break down the numbers, and they tell you if you're playing the range game and the price is right, what's the range game for today's wide receivers, especially guys in their first contract heading to the second one, the ones that are viewed as really good. There's that group of four we've been talking about this entire offseason, which includes Titans wide receiver A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, Terry McLaurin in Washington, and Deebo Samuel in San Francisco. And it seems like that number is between $22 and $25 million. But with the caveat, they may be asking for $30 million. How do you make this work in the NFL? How do you pay your quarterback between $30 and $40 million? How do you pay your receiver, your top receiver, between $25 and $30 million and not have that affect a football roster for how good you are? Do you believe the receivers should be the second highest paid position in the league?
Well, it sounds like they need to get an NIL collective and get some funds coming up alongside that are not in cahoots with the NFL, and you can supplement some players' salaries. Speaking of that, Oscar Tshiebwe is coming back to Kentucky, so I wonder what his NIL number will be next year. We didn't really talk about it yesterday, but Scottie Pippen has decided to turn pro. But you can't do that, I guess, in the NFL, at least above board. I wonder if teams will start getting creative with that. But I do think it's just you have to stay strong with your value on every position. I think I go back to a great interview that I've referred to probably a dozen times now since we had it. And Bill Polian, he had a philosophy for his team, and he prioritized the positions that he wanted to budget more money for, and he stuck to his guns, even if it cost him good players. The Patriots are another example. They stick to their guns. They are not afraid to trade a player towards the end of his prime to get value for him. And so that may be what John Robinson is faced with here. As much as everybody loves A.J. Brown, I'm a huge fan of his. And, of course, they've been desperate to have a number one receiver for so long.
But is he worth $25 million a year?
I don't know. I don't know the salary cap numbers as well to really be able to tell you exactly what the number is for him.
Well, just to put it in perspective, what's he making now, about $2 million? Maybe three? What's his number? Elijah, do you have his number right now? I mean, it's small.
I do not.
He's a second-round pick. I mean, what is it, $2-3 million? Think about that jump. to a team that's already, we've talked about all offseason and leading up to the offseason, that was been cap strapped. That deals were going to happen because of where they are in their salary cap.
I think you have to weigh what you could get at a trade. I think if you're going to push the envelope here, then you've got to do your due diligence and find out what you could get in a trade. And you have to be willing to use other things at your disposal, which is just wait it out. If you want to just wait it out, you can wait it out and risk that a player will be unhappy or shoot himself in the foot, unfortunately, at the expense of the team. Sometimes if you sit out and you miss practice and you miss reps and you come in, you get hurt. That's happened a lot of times before in a holdout situation, because that's the only recourse that A.J. Brown has. Although, I mean, he can ask for a trade. You don't have to accommodate the request. That's why we're all curious, I think, as to what the reaction of the 49ers will be to this trade request.
SpotTrack has A.J. Brown entering the final year of a four-year, $5.6 million rookie deal, which ranks him 68th amongst receivers in total earnings. So he's making peanuts.
Yes. But all of these things that we've been discussing, Darren, when you're trying to put a value on A.J. Brown, he's a number one receiver. He's a difference maker for this team. When he's right, he does things that nobody's done in a long time at that position for this franchise. But alongside of that, he has been banged up. He's had the dropsies a little bit. The stats, the end-of-the-year stats, both the counting stats for your fantasy team and the analytics, the efficiency, are not great. Mm-mm. They're not elite, right? They're not Julio Jones in his prime. It's not like he's just doing things that nobody's ever done before. He's just better than what they've had there.
Correct.
And he is a difference maker. So you'd almost be paying him for stuff that he hasn't done yet.
And that's a hell of a raise. Wouldn't we all, anybody out there listening, wouldn't we all love to have a raise like that? Basically,
no question.
More than 10 times your current salary?
But that is what you're faced with. That's what, you know, let's use the example you used before. You know, what teams do with the leap of faith and paying guys before they have to try to get them at a bargain. So to me, that's got to be part of the thinking here. Like the Ronald Acuna, Evan Longoria did it with the Rays, you know, years ago. That was one of the first. A lot of hockey teams do it now with their young players. The Predators did it with Roman Josi. They said, you know what, we're going to bet on Roman Josi. We're going to offer him a lot of guaranteed money at a young age before we have to, but we're going to save money in the long run. And that's exactly how it worked with Roman Josi and with Mattias Ekholm, for that matter, on their previous contracts, not
correct,
the ones they're under now. But they got a lot of good value, maybe the best of anybody out of those. So to me, that should be part of the thinking with A.J. Brown. If I'm going to give you the money before I have to, you got to give me a little bit of a break. But that doesn't seem like what Samuel and McLaurin, you know, the player empowerment, they're trying to push the envelope even more before they've really done it. What has A.J. Brown really done? He said two seasons of just over 1,000 yards.
Catches.
He didn't even have 1,000 yards last year.
No. No. Like, we're talking about...
Again, this sounds like we don't like A.J. Brown. We love A.J. Brown. I'm a huge fan of A.J. Brown, but we got to be reasonable here.
Yeah. Let's go to Reno on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
What's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. First, I think A.J. Brown at 70 catches, never had any more than 70 catches, getting more than $20 million is a joke. He's not, I mean, he's great, yes, but he doesn't have 70 catches and he's injury prone. Okay, I wouldn't do that, but that's just me. Deebo Samuel turned down a four-year, $25 million deal. So is it really about the money? I don't know. There's got to be some personnel issues. Maybe it's Trey Lance. He doesn't like what he sees and he wants out. If he wants to be traded, you turn down $100 million. I'll trade you, but I'm starting at Tyreek Hill numbers. I'm not going.
Wait a minute. What did you say he turned down? 25 per or 25 for the contract?
Four for 100.
Four for 100 he turned down?
Yeah.
Well, that's
so I don't know if that's, you know, been done, but it was on Twitter from a 49ers reliable source, so I'm taking it for what it is. But I'm starting, if he wants to be traded.
But remember, when you say 4 for 100, that's not hockey or baseball guaranteed, right? There's
four for 100.
What's the guarantee?
It didn't mention that. So, yeah, you, that is correct. I just don't – I don't – if you want to sit out, great. We're going to offer to trade you, but we're starting at Tyreek Hill. And if it doesn't get that numbers, then if you want to sit out, then hold out and get fined everything you're going to do. But I'm not trading Deebo Samuel for less than what the Chiefs got for Tyreek Hill. I'm not.
Thank you for the phone call. Appreciate it. We'll continue the discussion on the other side. If Deebo's – I haven't seen that anywhere, and I'm not saying Reno – it's not, you know, he saw it somewhere. I'm not saying that's true or not true, but give me a break. I mean, 4 for 100, like, I need to know more, need to know particulars. I find that hard to believe, considering he was on basically the same contract as A.J. Brown, a little bit more. He's been getting paid peanuts. That's, you know, he's again, really, really good receiver slash running back. But you're at the stage of turning down 25 per? I don't know. I'd have to see that from somebody like, you know, Charles Robinson or somebody that really, really – Adam Schefter, Jeff Darlington, one of those cats reporting that before I – so I could really be floored that he turned that down. We'll get to Larry. We'll get to Doug. A lot more of you wanting to weigh in, and we'll wrap up the third hour next. Smokeville Smoke Shop, 699 West Main Street in Hendersonville from 2 to 5. Today, the 420 blowout event. Discounts store-wide, free dab bar, food and dessert trucks, live music. Plus, we'll be there. A chance to win tickets. We, as in ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chance to win tickets to an upcoming Predators home game. That's 2 to 5, Smokeville Smoke Shop in Hendersonville. Back here on the DDC. Deebo Samuel has informed the 49ers he wants to be traded. Interesting tweet. It was from SpotTrack that Andrew Brandt, who we used to do a weekly with for years, used to be in the front office with the Green Bay Packers. He kind of responded to this. And SpotTrack put out there that Deebo Samuel asking for a trade request, you know, the team still holds all the leverage because of the CBA. Come training camp, if he doesn't report to mandatory camps, they can start fining him. And then Samuel could be facing, they can then move him from UFA to RFA because of the CBA. So Andrew Brandt weighed in and said, because he's been in this position in the front office, he says, the team has all the leverage here per the CBA. Same holds true here. Same holds true here with John Robinson and the Titans.
I saw that same tweet, Darren, and I was thinking the same thing. I do think this is where the line could be drawn. And we're going to find out if this player empowerment is going to be effective or not, right? You've got to know when you have the leverage and when you don't. The problem is it becomes a lose-lose, right? If you're draw the line in the sand, both parties get hurt.
Yep.
If the team, let's just say the 49ers, take this to the extreme, kind of like the Steelers did, with Le'Veon Bell, they never buckled, right?
Nope.
They're just like, all right, we'll find another guy. We got James Conner. We'll make it work. Le'Veon, have fun. You know, hang out. Do what you want to do. If you want to play, call us.
And we won't pay you.
And we're not paying you.
And you're saving us $14 million. Yep.
And Deebo Samuel and A.J. Brown and Terry McLaurin, they haven't made the big money yet. So you're taking a lot of risk. Like, at least Le'Veon Bell had a lot of money in the bank. Or he had made a lot of money when he decided to hold out. He wasn't on his first contract. He was getting paid, right? He just was going for the last big contract, and it backfired on him.
Yep.
This is even more risk, you could argue, because you got your prime of your career ahead of you, and you haven't made the big money.
And you do not want to get moved into RFA status if you know that you have the ability to be a UFA, right? Big difference.
That's correct. Yes.
Let's go to Larry.
You can't go anywhere.
That's right. I mean,
you're restricted. Could you play in the USFL? I don't know.
Well, you can't. But remember, the team, again, has all the leverage.
You could play baseball.
Free agents. Yeah.
You could go play baseball.
Larry wants to weigh in on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com.
Yeah. I don't know what the caller and one of you guys, I forget, the Willie or Donna, whichever one it is, you guys are talking about what has AJ done. You got to be kidding me. Who's the best offensive player we have?
Derrick Henry. Without a doubt, it's AJ. No way. Yes,
it's AJ. AJ Brown has single-handedly won us ball games.
So is Derrick Henry.
Absolutely.
I mean, but look what we did last year without Derrick. We are a tough running team. We can put Devontae or Hilliard in there. They both did outstanding. Yes, Derrick is the man, but I mean, we got to pay the quarterback. We got to pay the pass rushers. If we can't keep AJ, we can't keep him. But
so what are you paying him?
Say, what has he done?
What do you want to pay him, Larry?
I'm not a general manager. If we can make it work and we can afford to pay him, I'm sure John will keep him.
Yeah,
we
but you can't just flippantly say pay him.
We all think he's a great player.
I'm not arguing with that so much as what you guys were saying. What has he done? What has he done? He's had 70 catches. Like, I don't think you guys have been watching these games. He is outstanding.
If we lose every game, he goes to another game.
You'll see how good he is on the other team. If we can't keep him, we can't keep him. I'd love to keep him, but I mean, in my opinion, he's the best offensive player we have. I mean, we don't know what we got in Derrick anymore. Like that last game, I went to that game, and we should not have been handing him the ball. We should have been handing Devontae the ball. But you know, hopefully, he gets back to himself. But I just think AJ's outstanding.
Well, if you've listened to our show the entire season, all we did was praise AJ Brown. So I don't know what, you know, if you've just tuned in for the first time and you're just
Larry, we've
defended him all year.
What has he done? Do you put
him in the same category as Devontae Adams? No, he's not. You put him in the same category as Tyreek
Hill? Tougher than Devontae. He's tougher and stronger and will catch the ball. Now, Devontae is probably a better route runner and more technical, but AJ's a beast.
And he misses games, and that gets held against you.
Last year, for really the first time, he missed a few games, more than normal.
You cannot be put in the same category as elite when you have 70 catches
without a doubt, an elite receiver. You cannot make that argument. There's no way.
Well, you can when you're negotiating a contract. You can.
Okay, maybe then you can say, well, you know, we want to pay you this because you missed some of these games. That's understandable, but hopefully we keep it. But all right, y'all have a good one.
All right, you too. I want to make this abundantly clear. Who's not saying that the importance of AJ Brown? We have defended him
right after
all
I said.
Year.
Yes.
Go back and look right at my tweets. I was at the 49ers game, sitting in the stands for the first time ever. I've never sat in the stands at a Titans game. I've always been in the press box. And I tweeted out, go back and look at my tweet. I said, without A.J. Brown, this team has no chance of winning this game. None. I tweeted that during the game.
Of course. That's one game. That's, again, look, you have to take in context what I said. I did say, what has he done? But right after I said that, what did I say? I said, it's going to sound like I don't want them to keep A.J. Brown. I do. But when you say, what has he done, you have to actually look at what he has done as a whole. He was 42nd in efficiency in Football Outsiders. He had less than 1,000 yards last year. When you say he catches everything, he really doesn't catch everything. He caught 60%. I'm sounding like the guy in the arbitration case, right? This is the really tough thing because I'm a huge fan of A.J. Brown. And I want him to say he is a difference maker. He is a number one wide receiver. But at the very same time, he hasn't done elite things yet. Not yet. So there is a value. So then the call, you know, what our caller just pointed out is really where the rubber meets the road. He kind of came back and said, well, I hope they can keep him. I hope they can keep him. I want them to keep him.
But when you say pay him whatever,
right value,
you can't say that. Like
you only have enough money to go around. It's not the Yankees who can just go ahead and pay whatever they want to pay, or the Mets or the Dodgers. There is a salary cap, and you have to stay inside the salary cap. Jeffrey Simmons is a massive.
I'm not taking it out on Larry, but there's nothing that drives me crazier than fans on Twitter or calling into a sports talk show and saying, pay him whatever. That's not how it works. No, you can't pay him whatever. Fine. Pay him $30 million a year. And then when he has 62 catches, you're going to be the first one to call in and say, holy crap, what were they thinking giving him $30 million a year? And, oh, by the way, the team isn't good because they had to let two other guys go to pay him $30 million a year. You can't just say pay him whatever. That's not how it works. I wish it – doesn't every general manager wish it was that easy? Oh, I can just pay whatever? Then, well, what is there to negotiate? Whatever. What do you want? Okay, great. We're done. Sign it. Here's the deal. Okay, next. We wouldn't even be talking about negotiations. It would be the easiest thing ever. Like, you can't say – pay guys whatever. That's not how it works. Scott, you're up next. Welcome in.
Yes, sir. Thank you for explaining to old Larry how the old world works. Maybe he's one of these new home buyers where you can just own a house and you can get a house. The idea that he thinks that A.J. Brown, while he is a above-average player, is anywhere close to the King Derrick Henry, he has lost his mind. And when he asked if we watch TV, do we watch the game, did we go to the game, yes, yes, and yes. So we've gotten rid of Dante? Probably not. But Derrick Henry on a bad day makes Derrick Henry look like a peewee football player. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Roll Tide.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Look, Derek Mason, who played in the league, is on the show, played in the league for 16 years. I trust his eyes, he knows the position better than anybody. He played it at a Hall of Fame level, in my opinion. When you say A.J. Brown catches everything, one, the stats tell you he does not. And, oh, by the way, two, which I think is even better than the stats, it's through his wide receiver eyes, Derek Mason tells you he does not catch everything. Derek Mason caught everything. If you threw it in the vicinity of him, he caught it. A.J.
Well,
Brown
let's look at catch
did not
rate. Let's
catch
look at the stats.
Everything.
Let's look at the catch rate. Catch rate for A.J. Brown. Now, he averaged 13.8 yards per catch. Okay, so the catch rate is relative to your yards per catch. If he's averaging 20 yards a catch, then maybe you could live with a lower percentage. He catches 60% of the balls thrown to him last year. Okay, that ranked 58th. In Football Outsiders, okay, 13.8. And again, I love A.J. Brown. He's a number one. There are reasons why those numbers were down on this team, and that's the leverage he has. What does your team look like without me? It doesn't look very good at that position, and it has been a desert for wide receivers for this team. I want A.J. Brown on this team if I'm John Robinson, but you gotta be willing to compromise here. Let's not get carried away with this, the player empowerment, all of this stuff. You can't overpay for somebody. You have to get the right number.
All right. Sorry we couldn't get – we've got a ton of reaction. We couldn't get to everybody. This hour's up. We got to come back and switch gears and talk with C-Mace. We do that every Wednesday at 1 o'clock, and we'll do that next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.